Welcome to the Africa Green Color Project, and as part of our Rethink series today, we are looking at energy as a tool for change and impact. Now, there have been a lot of conversations and there's been so much news about how energy can be used as a tool for change. We've seen the impacts through rural electrification in many areas in sub-Saharan Africa. We've seen it through the growth in the investment in renewable energy technology. Rachel Kite, CEO of Sustainable Energy for All and Special Representative of the UN Secretary General for Sustainable Energy for All, in her opening remarks at the Sustainable Energy for All Forum held in Lisbon in May this year, said that we need to think differently about how we deliver affordable, reliable, and clean energy services. On our podcast today, we want to ask ourselves, how can we rethink how we use energy as a tool for change and impact? And our focus is on developing countries. To do so, we're joined by Dr. Scott Kennedy, who is speaking to us from Boston, Massachusetts in the US. Welcome, Dr. Kennedy.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to join your podcast.
Okay, so how about you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure, thanks. I'm the Executive Director of Energy Action Partners. This is an international organization that focuses on providing access to sustainable energy. We work internationally and primarily focus on regions with very limited energy infrastructure, looking at off-grid or weak grid environments for providing electricity access.
Okay, so you'll probably be able to answer a lot of the questions that we're going to ask today. On one of our previous podcasts with Morwesi Ramonyai on off-grid electrification, which has been attached to this podcast, we talked about energy as being provided as a service. And so we looked at how it can go beyond electricity. And she even gave us a few examples where we talked about communal fridges, for instance, in places where people maybe want to preserve food and you want to bring electricity to them as a solution. And so we can see that energy can evolve into more impactful services rather than just simply providing electricity. So from a practical implementation perspective, how do you think that we can ensure that energy can be provided as a solution that goes beyond electricity, but also enables the development of energy services?
Well, that's a very good question. I think oftentimes we fall into a trap of thinking that, you know, once electricity access is available, then, you know, the benefits of that access immediately follow. But I think it requires a little more thought, and so it's a great question to start. I think some of the questions we have to ask ourselves around electricity and energy access is really about how this electricity or energy will be used, and what are the benefits or impacts. Will it be used for lighting, communication, you know, productive use? You know, how will it really be used? A second question really is around whether it'll be financially sustainable. Is this model around the electricity access going to be able to sustain into the future and handle future repairs and maintenance and challenges that the provision may meet or may entail? And then one thing also that's not often or sometimes not considered as widely is it equitable? Is this access to electricity or other energy services going to be equitably distributed? So I think that really to, you know, what in you're asking about what are kind of the practical measures, I think first is that recognition that it's not just the access. It's really about how this system of energy provision is maintained and sustained, you know, over time, kind of the ongoing management. And once you think from that perspective, you have to think about there's a lot of other supporting activities, supporting investment, coordinating, you know, conflicts of use. If you're talking about a mini grid where you've got multiple users competing for essentially a scarce resource, or investing in new equipment or productive income generating activities, all of these things need to be managed in coordination with this new energy system. So I think that's really the first step, to kind of recognize it's this more complex system that has a lot of moving parts, not just the technology and the infrastructure, but some, you know, the end users and then the managers of the system, and figuring out how we can coordinate all of this to ensure that, you know, it's not just electrons that are flowing or not when it's not working, but it's actually, you know, energy services that provide some sort of that provide a substantial benefit for the community. Now, one way I think that's a good place to start in making sure that there's a productive, you know, coordination of all this is to have a lot of community engagement in the process of designing and implementing and operating the system. And that's a topic that you know, I've, through my organization, have thought a lot about.
Okay, so when you mentioned community engagement, you talked about it as though it's a factor that has not been considered a lot. Is this something that you've seen from your own experience? And is that one of the biggest hindrances, or do they all sort of balance each other? When you talked about it being equitable, ensuring that their financial services, do they all balance each other, or there's one that is, say, more, has a bigger impact than another?
I think they're all important, and so it's hard to say one more important than the other, but I think one thing that's different about the community engagement process is it's one that the requirements and the need for it continues beyond the initial installation, you could say, or implementation of the project. So if I were to highlight what I think are kind of the main barriers and how community engagement fits in amongst them, you know, I would say that, you know, typically the three main barriers or challenges that are most widely cited or discussed are, well, so one is certainly the technology. You know, do we have the technology that's affordable and efficient and robust and can provide that energy service, you know, over a long period of time? And another barrier is really, is there an appropriate or an effective business model, one that is meets the affordability requirements of the users, and but sustains a business and makes it financially viable. And then another one that's most commonly talked about is the finance and financing these systems to make sure that they remain affordable. And typically the high upfront cost of what would be a renewable energy based system is not a dead end to trying to implement that project. So I think these three are most common: that technology, business model, and finance. But they tend to be, you know, upfront. And then once a system is installed, there's this whole other side of the operation and ongoing maintenance of the system. And I think that's tends to be why community engagement may not be, it's changing a bit, but traditionally hasn't been as prioritized as the other three, because the requirements for it tend to be more heavily focused on the operational phase. And so I think it's equally important, but challenging because it's also very dependent upon the particular project, on whatever, you know, the society, the culture, the laws and norms where you implement a project. And so, you know, kind of standard best practices for community engagement are not as generalizable, say, as with the technology or even the business models and financing. So I think that's why it remains a particular challenge, and especially so on the long-term sustainability of providing energy access.
Okay, so tell us a bit about your organization specifically.
Sure. So Energy Action Partners, as I said, we focus on access to sustainable energy. We really have two approaches, I said, that we look at. So first, we have a group and an effort that's on the engineering, design, and installation of mini grids, particularly solar and solar diesel mini grids. And so we have we have a team focusing on that effort of really the engineering design and installation and commissioning of these systems. We have another effort that I would say mutually supports that, which focuses a lot on the training and capacity building around energy system management. And this other group is focused on, as I mentioned before, this importance of community engagement, not just for, you know, informing the users or the community about how a system works and how it performs, but getting building the skills to be effective managers of what may be a community or a village mini grid. And so that other effort of our organization is really focused on capacity building around management of off-grid or small mini-grid energy systems.
Okay, and from a technology perspective, I'm kind of just trying to use the framework that you gave us, where you talked about the technology, ensuring that it's an appropriate business model and that you have a proper financing system. So from a technological perspective, do you think that the technology that's available now is enough to enable you to achieve the goals that you're trying to achieve, or has it been a limiting factor?
I think the capabilities of the technology are sufficient and sufficiently developed to provide off-grid or mini-grid energy access. I think that's not in question. There is kind of a still a cost barrier for high reliability mini-grid or off-grid systems to provide the same level of service as a centralized grid. So I think that that's one area that, you know, with time, particularly batteries as an energy storage technology, as the cost of batteries drops, that will reduce that barrier. But I would say that the technology capabilities are there. The kind of point that where I think improvements will help is being able to increase the reliability of these off-grid systems as the cost of the energy storage components goes down.
Maybe just for clarity for our listeners, when you talk about mini grids and microgrids, what size or what capacity are we looking at?
Sure, that's a good question, and so it actually depends on where you're speaking. So here, me based in the U.S., the microgrid is the more common term, and I may use that sometimes without noticing. But in mini grids, essentially, can be thought of as a small power system that can operate independently, producing its own power, and if there is a larger grid available, can interconnect or disconnect and operate in either a connected or an islanded situation. The size of these, you could say anywhere from 10 kilowatts to 1 megawatt. I think this depends on where you are in the world and what the common use of the term is. But essentially, it's a standalone power system that will provide power for that community or that off-taker.
Okay, and also from a cost perspective, you say that storage is expensive. Is that the biggest cost in terms of your systems as well? And is storage technology also very accessible?
Yeah, I think so. In terms of the cost of a mini grid, it involves a lot about what's the reliability trade-off. So if you are trying to ensure that you have a high reliable source of power and you don't have any, grid connection to provide any backup and you're doing it all locally, then that high reliability requires a sufficiently sized energy storage component of the system. And so I would say this is a main driver of the cost for these types of systems. If you are in a situation where that level of reliability is not, does not need to meet the same as a grid connection, then the energy storage component can go down and it can become more affordable. So that's really the variable where you have this cost and reliability trade-off. The other components in terms of the PV panels are continually reducing in price and not a main driver of the cost. And then you have the electronic equipment and the controls and those which, is another major component, but there's not a lot of variability there that tends to be fixed when you're within a small a window of size of the system. But it's really the energy storage and the battery technology that you have some trade-off for that drives the cost of the final delivered electricity.
Oh, okay. And through your projects, I'm assuming that you're also working with communities because you're bringing these energy solutions to communities. How are you working to engage the community? How are you working to fit that component of community engagement into your project to ensure that it's sustainable?
Yeah, so this is an area that we've thought a lot about and really model our process around a philosophy of not just engagement, but active participation of the community for which we're looking to build the energy system. And so what we've done is we've thought about how can we break down what we believe is essentially a kind of communication barrier or gap between the technology developer or a mini-grid developer's understanding or concept of the microgrid, and then the community as the end user, and essentially the governance of the community, the institutions within the community that typically governs access to resources and access to infrastructure. Now, when you have a new technology come into a community, there's like a mini grid. It's essentially a black box, and so it can be very hard for anyone who's unfamiliar with this technology to really understand the constraints, how it operates, and to be actively involved in decision making about, you know, how large should it be? How should we handle conflicts around use if there are, or how should we ensure that payments are on time and there's no theft? When it's a black box, it's a lot harder for the community to be involved. So what we've done is we've developed an approach where we have actually a software tool that we call the Mini Grid game. And this game is used first to just demystify what this mini grid is. You know, there's some variability in supply if you're using solar, and then the different households have different load curves, and you kind of get a sense of how the overall system operates. And then what the tool is used to do, it's used actually in a group workshop where everyone gets around and plays this game, where they role play their actions as household electricity users. So they buy appliances, they turn them on or off, they're given their electricity bills, and they can choose to pay them or they can choose to steal if they want. It's all in a fun game environment. And then when they see how their actions individually impact their own household finances, they also get to see how it impacts the overall sustainability of the mini grid. And the goal of the players in this game is to first they operate as an individual household, but then they have to cooperate and essentially build consensus on what the system looks like. How big is it? What's the electricity price? Do we have any rules on when you can use your power, or how much you can use at different times of day? They'll set all of these rules and essentially design parameters so that the community doesn't run out of money. And when the community doesn't run out of money, and you've sort of sized the system right, and everybody's needs are met, then you've won the game. So it's a cooperative game that the community will use to get the kind of main design parameters and set the rules of the system. And we think that this is really an approach that allows a good partnership between a mini grid developer and a community. You can really access the community's knowledge and their normal norm, you know, in ways of dealing with resource management and governance within the community, and you can pull that into the mini grid design and technology constraints. And so this is our approach that we've developed for how we kind of don't just give. We try to have really sort of substantial community engagement.
Okay, and just from now like a simulation to reality perspective, how do you then set the price for the product? Because if I understood correctly, you said that in the game, they sort of the player has an opportunity to decide on, say, this price of electricity. How does it then come into reality? Does the community sort of have an agreement on their price? How does that work?
Mm-hmm. So it may depend a little on where the project is. So if we say for sake of argument that you're in a place that you have the freedom to set your tariff as you like, so there's no mandated tariff by the government or municipality. If that's the case and you do have that freedom, then what you would do during the game is you would, as you understand, what's the given the electricity behavior of the people, how much electricity they use, you can come up with the amount that would be sufficient to pay back the cost of the system and maintain, long-term a fund for repairs and maintenance. And then how you implement that is actually a very important next step, and is very dependent upon where you are. So in some cases where we've played the game, there would be a village energy committee, and we would they use the game as a consensus building process, and then they would set the new tariff themselves and enforce the new tariff based on what the outcome of the gameplay was. If in different locations you may need to get approval from a different authority for setting a tariff, and so you would want to work through all those steps afterwards. But the game is the part of the process where it makes the system much more transparent, so people understand why the tariff is set as it is, and then also also therefore, you know, encourages a lot more, you know, cooperation. Particularly on the theft side as well. We've found that theft can be very common in these type of energy systems. And it's usually because the players aren't really thinking that they're stealing from each other. There's some third party that they don't really know that will absorb the cost of their theft. But when you play the game, you realize that you're actually stealing from each other. If you steal power, the system will not be sustainable, and others will have their supply cut. And so that's another outcome of using this approach.
Oh, and are there any projects that you've actually already implemented that you've seen to be very successful?
Yeah, so our work with the Minigun Grim has focused more in Southeast Asia, where we've worked with communities in Malaysia and in Myanmar. And we've had good success with the Malaysian communities. The Myanmar is very early stage of the project, and some of the outcomes that we found is one of the communities we worked with recognized after playing that they should have been getting more revenue than they actually were. So they noticed that something's wrong here. Maybe there was theft or tampering. They had prepaid meters, and they also recognized that the type of tariff, another community recognized that they wanted to switch from a fixed tariff to, you know, an energy-based tariff. So they had what is sometimes common for very small grids is just a fixed payment per month for the family, and they wanted to switch to a payment per use, per kilowatt hour. And so that was another outcome. Both the communities actually they enjoyed playing it and would like to continue having this as a tool for them to continue to manage, you know, challenges that may come up in the future with their energy systems. So we found there was good success for it, and we're now looking to develop a version that's more easily deployable so we can share this with more people. Right now, it's really our team that's been implementing it, but we're looking to spread it more widely.
That's very interesting. And just to conclude, what are some of the biggest challenges that you're facing with your project now?
Well, let's see. I think with this project, it has a couple aspects. So it has partly a challenge associated with understanding what the need is. So, and there's multiple stakeholders involved here. There's a need of the mini grid developers for, you know, tools and approaches to better interact or have more constructive or substantive interactions with the end users. There's a need within the communities to have more agency and participation in the process to strengthen their own institutions for managing their energy system. And try to aligning these needs, I mean, we feel there's a good fit, but there's a story with each use. And so each community you go to has a slightly different history, has slightly different challenges. And so I would say coming up with a very sort of universal need or arguing that universal need is something that we're working on now with our various deployments of the game. And then there's the other side of now this is for us as an organization, this is turning into an effort to develop a tool and have this tool be used widely with technical support for it, and kind of building essentially a business around that. And so we're stepping into that realm as well. So I think those are the two main activities that we're working on now: getting more experience using it with different communities and understanding its value to them, and then also from more of a software and development side, getting a very streamlined, publicly available tool that we can distribute widely.
Great. Thank you so much for all the insight that you've given us, Dr. Kennedy. To our listeners, you can check out our Instagram. It's Green Collar Africa. Our Twitter is Green Sea Africa. Our Facebook is the Africa Green Collar Project. And our website is www.greencollarafrica.org. Thank you so much, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.